We are checking in with State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy on Beacon Hill today in your office, Jackie. How are you?
Hey Joe, I think the audience can hear my voice a little better. Still a little scratchy, but glad that I am a little more audible.
Glad to hear that the allergies are starting to wane. We just need to get through this pollen season. A lot of folks are suffering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the only one that's experiencing a color green on their car. My car is definitely just like you have to wear protection to open the door. I mean, it's such a thick layer of pollen right now. And the rains were wonderful this weekend, but that's a temporary reprieve. So hopefully you're right. Hopefully we can get through the next few weeks of pollen season, especially with Memorial Day parade coming up at the end of the month, where I prefer not to be wheezing and sniffling through a parade.
I know there's so many outdoor events that are planned between now and basically the end of the school year. Everybody tries to cram everything in May and June.
No, that's exactly it. We blink and here we are in May.
It is amazing. So, what are you doing at the State House today?
Well, today we're doing Vesak Day. So those who aren't aware, Vesak is the holiday where a Buddha was born, found enlightenment, and passed away after he found the enlightenment to go to Nirvana. And we're holding a very little celebration with the Buddhist, different Buddhist temples. To recognize the day of the State House. So I give compliments to Representative Gentile. I think he actually keeps correcting the pronunciation and going the direction. Whom his and his staff was able to put this together last year. It was well received by people here that we're doing it again with them. So much compliments to him and his office for putting it together. So that's part of today. Obviously, tomorrow, as part of AIPA Shop Month, me and John Keenan will make a trip up to Roboto, which has been in newspapers a lot up in North Quincy. On Thursday, there's the Quincy Asian Resource Dinner that evening, the award scholarship ceremony. Then on Friday, I am vi visiting UMass, which is having a conversation about Washington, D.C. impacts on the state. Especially on the lower socioeconomics, as well as people of color. They'll be having several of these forums, one on Fridays on education. Then I'm heading straight to Lowell to visit the Cambodian Genocide Memorial, which basically becomes a day in Lowell, meeting the Cambodian community. Then on Saturday, I'm making some remarks on an AIPI cultural event at the Boston Opera Lyric, which will consume probably a good chunk of my afternoon. And I think I get Sunday off.
Wow, is that all tacky?
That's just the events. It doesn't really count the day job components of this as we continue to work on the committees and also through the legislation and people's constituent service requests. And obviously, I keep in very much regular contact with staff as we do work distribution and discuss. Sometimes you get a unique case, we discuss how to handle some of these cases we've never seen before on people looking for help. So that's on top of that. And of course, I don't say this much, but obviously at some point I gotta start fundraising and doing things like that as well, because this is still politics and I am still a candidate and that's kind of part of the job and gotta manage that. And you're aware that my mom has had some health issues and I'm trying to juggle that into a part of my schedule. Obviously my mother takes priority over everything else, but it's something I have to keep mindful. Which sometimes forces me to create cancellations and move some parts of my schedule around.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it makes you keenly aware too of the challenges that caregivers at home face every day, right?
No, I am very sympathetic and very understanding. I've been doing this for actually many, many years now. And those who don't know, I lost my father when I was a teenager. And we're not a large family, immigrants, my parents immigrated here. I was born here, but we didn't come with a large family. The family diaspora was essentially spread to the four winds of the planet. Unfortunately, the way I would look at it, I'm very much used to just being on my own because that's how I grew up. And we had great friends and family, and I always give a lot of thanks to St. Anne's school community as well as the BCI community during some of the tougher times of my life at home with my dad. But This kind of, I think people know me, know that we tend to be a bit more attitude of independence. And it isn't like I always appreciate your offer of help, but until I actually know what I need, it's hard to make an ask of what you need to have done.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's true, across the spectrum for folks who are caring for older people at home. So,
Yes.
yeah, is there services at the state level that are available, Tacky, if folks need them?
Yes, I mean, if you contact Social Elder Services, they have availability of caregivers, PCAs, visiting nurses. My mom's case, more recently, she needs physical therapy and occupational therapy, which South Cove Manor, where she was doing rehabilitation, was very thankful them and so sure Elder Services to put it together. But things like Meals on Wheels you can get. Apparently, there's more than one place you get this service, and been unsuccessful convinced my mom to do this, but there's a Del Day app, which can be a great 1 or 2 days or 4 days or whatever, where you get your mom or dad or grandma or grandfather out to socialize with other folks of similar age, where they get 2 square meals as well as activities and entertainment that they should choose to partake into. And some of the Del Day app around here is actually pretty good in terms of the service provided, and they all take Medicare, so MassHealth covers the cost. So there's a lot of services provided for senior citizens. As for caregivers, again, I'm not giving you tax advice. Talk to your accountant and financial planner. Depending on your circumstances, you may qualify for head of household, make your loved one independent. If you do over 50% of their costs of maintaining their living. There's always been talk in both DC and in the State House about whether we should be doing more on caregiving tax credits or tax deductions. This is a conversation that happens down in DC as well as in Massachusetts. I'm trying to make it work. We do have a dependent tax deduction. It's actually a tax credit that's already in place for both children and adults that you're caring for, which you should look at when you do your taxes. Maybe you qualify, maybe you don't. You also have to be mindful that some of the deductions you take as a caretaker, particularly if you live with your loved one, in my mother's situation, I've said this a couple of times, she does really well in the senior circuit tax break.
Yes, yeah, that's a great benefit, yeah.
Yeah, but she can't qualify for that if I take her as independent.
Ah, I see. Okay. All right. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's that costs you nothing to find out if you qualify, and it's retroactive too.
Absolutely. A lot of these tax issues, particularly on the credit side, you have 3 years to amend your previous statements at the Department of Revenue. So if you didn't take advantage of something existed, you get a file a return. It's a bit of work depending on your circumstance. So again, I highly advise talking to your accountant or your tax preparer that say, "Hey, I missed this in my family. Is it worth my time to amend a past tax return?"
Yes.
And when I say credit, it comes back as cash.
That's right. Yes, and it can't. Yes, it is worth your time. So it definitely, if you qualify, for sure, look into it. My mom also benefited from it for years while she was still alive. So it was helpful.
No, absolutely. So, for those who are caregivers, I fully understand what's going on. I do understand that we all have different circumstances regarding age and medical condition. But yeah, this is a very big part of my life.
Speaking of politics, candidates for governor are coming out of the woodwork here.
Yeah, no, regretfully, as you all know, candidates keep coming out earlier and earlier, and it's largely fundraiser driven. For those who are not aware, Massachusetts has different campaign finance rules than the federal government in our neighboring states. So a candidate can only receive $1,000 per calendar year, except in cases of special elections. Per individual, the state prohibits business, corporate, business entities, any kind of similar type of business entity checks. There's actually a list of everything that you cannot take. So you cannot take business checks. When it comes to a political action committee PAC money, the cap is $500 that a candidate can take. And there's a cap on how much you can take. So in my case, it's $7,500. A senator is about $14,500. I believe a statewide candidate is about $22,500 and $500 individual checks from a PAC, from a PAC. There are people's committees, which is outside the PAC, but there's really like seven of them out there, and only three actually have real money. So you have to actually, as a candidate, kind of sort out whether or not those people's committees are outside the PAC limit. Again, capped at 500, actually makes sense for you because of the nature of your candidacy. And then lobbyists are capped at $200 per person per calendar year. So the lobbying teams cannot give as much as a private individual. And of course, campaign finance requires us to report all donors, regardless of dollar amount, on the public record. So even you cannot take cash donations of greater than $50, but you still have to record that cash as an individual. And you also cannot take money orders greater than $100. You also have to record that as well on the campaign finance of the person's home address. And if it's over $200, you have to put down the occupation and their job position or description of job into the report as well. So Massachusetts is actually a very high disclosure. And if you're trying to run a $5 million campaign, for example, as a statewide candidate, you have to get fundraising early.
Yes, I see. And does that money have to be spent on the campaign? Are there restrictions on how it is spent?
Yes, the restriction is quote unquote further your political career. So it's somewhat of a broad statement, but you got to be able to convince the Office of Campaign Political Finance that your expenditure is somehow tied to your re-election or your job. And it's a little different when you're an incumbent versus a candidate. So, for example, most people realize that the vast majority of us do not receive stamps at the state house. You actually are not responsible for your own postage. And in my case, I'm a chairman. I do get a postage allowance, but before I became a chairman, there was no postage allowance.
No, I
So you
didn't know that.
Yeah, I have to pay for out of pocket, or I have to use my campaign account for that. And it's a justifiable expenditure because postage mail from the state house is furthering my political career by nature.
Interesting.
Yeah, today my office checked in me regarding buying citation covers. My citation covers either come out of my pocket or comes out of the campaign finance account. And they're running about $4 a piece now, these
Oh,
citations.
wow.
Yeah, inflation, guys, it affects that as well. So obviously we order a lot in one sit down because we want it to last as long as possible before the next order. So my last order was before COVID. And during COVID, there was very few citations being issued. And I was printing small paper, 8 by 11 size ones at home because we couldn't access the big printers at the office and just throwing those right in the mail to folks who was looking for one. So there's these kind of costs out there. One of the big changes we made last cycle was to allow candidates to use their campaign accounts for childcare services. That's something the federal government has worked towards, and we did that last cycle to give candidates with children a greater opportunity by allowing them to use them for childcare services during the term of the candidacy, meaning term of when they're running for office.
I see. Yeah. Interesting. These are costs that, the normal folks don't even think of, myself included.
Well, the Globe and the Herald, kick us around on campaign expenditures. So, for example, we can't take gifts, period, from entities. Like, I can't take an honorarium if I was engaged in a program where I am presenting on a panel that's out of state, which I have actually not done yet, which would be kind of nice if I could. They can pay for airfare and room. But they can't really do much else. And
I see.
nominal price meals, nominal meaning like a bagel.
Ah, okay.
If, for example, I received an award from the National Association of Employees in 2018 down in Atlantic City, they can't pay for my travel or room.
Oh, really?
So if I receive an award from out of state, and it actually is a campaign function because it's an award in my official capacity, I would actually have to pay out of pocket or through my campaign account. So I'm not judging anyone's expenditures. However, it doesn't always tell the full story in the newspapers about what these funds were used for. And also, when there's an expectation, I'm a chairman. I have to, there's some expectation that I have to host my committee members,
Yes.
which campaign finance allows.
I see.
At the same time, though, when I have a pizza party for students coming up to visit the state house, that is allowable campaign expenditure.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
No different from when I go to an event, I will make donations at the door. However, you can't use it to buy raffle tickets. That comes out of my own pocket. And
Oh, okay.
I'm very conscious of the two lines of what you can do and not do.
Yeah.
So there's enormous flexibility if you can justify it.
Okay. Deep thoughts from the world of political finance.
It's a lot of accounting too on my side. So I make sure that I have documentation that follows every expenditure regarding the request,
Oh,
what the
yeah.
charitable organization is, the amount that's provided, but conversely, donations coming in. I do actually make copies of people's checks. If it's an online donation, I make sure that the spreadsheets are readily available in case there's an audit. So some people do not like to, believe it or not, people don't like to let people know they donated money. And it's actually interesting while people are concerned about candidates hiding things. Actually, and I get it because you're a public record once you do. But
Right.
people are afraid to become a public record and will try to do clandestine donations, which I do not allow. So, often the media will sometimes portray us as the continuous bad guy, sometimes forgetting that, it can be intimidating for some folks to donate money to a candidate, and particularly since they'll be known as a public record.
Yeah,
So,
if it's a controversial candidate, I can see that. Yeah.
yeah, absolutely. They try to smuggle, like, here's like $500 cash. The
Right.
answer is no, you can't do that. So, I give a lot of credit to Office of Campaign Political Finance. If you read the newsletters, it's very informative. A lot of people do make innocent mistakes, unintentional mistakes. They do point out some innocent mistakes and so that we do not make the same innocent mistake. And they just get a slap on the wrist and just a notification the mistake was made. Obviously, serious cases, it gets referred to the attorney general and sometimes even to the U.S. attorney general.
Yes, sure, depending on the source of the funding, yeah. Seeing as we're talking about money, let's talk about the economy, Tacky. The stock market went berserk yesterday.
It's definitely a stock market that responds to news and not to like actual like performance of companies right now.
It's so true. I think the Dow is up over 1,100 points on news that the U.S.-China tariff deal has been suspended for 90 days.
Well, I'm not giving up saying it was liberation money of your money day. The market only came full circle back to the day you lost a lot of money.
Yeah, that's
And
still gone.
that's still gone. And part of it is that you also lost opportunity to grow your money as well. And the market does have enormous volatility during the course of a year, not unusual. But generally, it's driven by events that does not involve having a president make a public statement nor a social media post. So this is actually a very unusual period where it's very clear the Trump administration has now definitely taken notice of the stock market, the bond markets, and other types of commodities to try to create some stability by choosing carefully the words. This most recent spike was caused by two things. One is a trade deal and framework with the British, which is curious because the British is a trade surplus country. They take in more than they give out to us. And it focused in on automobiles, where there will be no extended tariffs on the first 100,000 automobiles. But greater than that, the average number of automobiles that come to the U.S. from the British is about 130,000. And the tariffs on steel has been loosened up. But Britain only has one steel mill left. The country during the Industrial Revolution was the steel and coal manufacturer provider of all of Europe, has been reduced to one steel plant, which is
Sure.
negligible in terms of tariffs.
Yeah, and if automobiles, unless you want to buy a Rolls or a Bentley.
You're right. It's only the high-end cars.
Yeah.
The higher-end income levels that can afford that level of vehicle, particularly the super souped-up ones, are going to be able to pay the tariff. So in terms of you and me, these things are very negligible. But the British have accepted still the existing, I believe, 20% tariff in total. Which will continue to put a lot of stress on the British economy. Again, this is a framework. This is not the final situation. The whole thing could fall apart by summertime, for all we know. And it takes about 9 months plus minimum 9 months to actually finalize an agreement. So that's the first spike in news. The second one is the so-called Geneva meeting with Secretary Bessent and his Chinese counterparts, the vice premier, as well as the finance team and trade teams and national security teams actually all showed up too. To discuss, and they have reached another situation where there's a 90-day pause, But the tariff on 20% to the so-called fentanyl situation is still in place. So actually, tariff is 10% pre Biden from the first Trump administration, plus 20% makes it 30%, and a
Okay.
handful of small cases, 40%. So you are still paying increased cost from China on 20% from the Trump administration one, additional 20%. And we'll see how it goes. But interesting enough, they had a massive tariff revenue of about $19 million in the month of April, which is most likely representative of the fact that there's a massive influx of goods people trying to get in. There was already kind of there at the ports that arrived. And the tariff system is kind of confusing because where it is in transit determines if the tariff hits.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I didn't. I was wondering about that, how they determine that, if it's in international waters or Chinese waters or American waters.
It's timing. So when the orders are issued in the tariffs, it's instant day of. But you're right. What's the difference between not in the country of origin, in the middle, and we're getting here, and what if it's already sitting in the docks
Right.
the States? So the tariffs hit when I believe, and I could be wrong about this, I could be wrong, that the tariffs hit when they're in transit.
Okay.
So a lot of goods were already coming in the month of March, going into April. And trying to anticipate whatever is going to happen in DC. So it's not surprising. Actually, I was not surprised by the sheer rubber tariffs because one would think that a lot of the big wholesalers would have been like maddeningly trying to get stuff in.
Yeah.
And they were already en route on the way here in the month of April because it takes weeks to get out of there. So your stuff came out of China, for example, on like March 30th, and it didn't get here to like April 10th or
Yep.
whatever. And you're getting hit with 125% debt.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's I think people are thinking it's going to be an instant reaction. We still don't know the total fallout from this.
No, we won't. I mean, the tariff number on $19 billion is a record. I do expect that maybe we'll have another similar number next month because, again, it takes time for things to get to you by ship. But the price impact we probably felt a little bit because people want the money early to get it out there. However, it will be more acute, probably about 3-ish months around about whether or not big businesses can put it inside their existing price structure and whether or not you as a consumer notice or don't notice it happened. That is something the avoids banker. Most of you back in 2018, 19, 20 had 10% tariffs from China. And you probably didn't feel it because the economy was very, very, very strong. Your wages was exceeding inflation. We're now still in a continuous situation where wage and inflation keeps flipping back and forth. And a macro data. I understand it doesn't work for you on a local home level, but in the
Right.
macro, it keeps flopping back and forth regarding which is beating which. But even then, today's inflationary prices are still high. I mean, eggs. Avian flu, did not blame Donald Trump on this for this one because it was avian flu. It's still recovery mode of 49 plus percent inflation. But even natural gas is at 15% plus inflation. So while you got 2.3% inflation was lower than expected, be mindful of the fact it's inequitable on the products that the Fed Reserve surveys are not all inflationary at the same price.
Right. Yep. I guess the only positive impact or number we've seen is unemployment is still pretty low. The job market is still pretty strong.
Job market strong, but people are staying on unemployment longer, but not so long that's considered a recessionary situation.
Right.
And layoffs occurred. Big tech is laying off folks. I just saw a news article saying that Microsoft's laying 3%, I think, of its workforce. It's not Amazon. Well, Amazon said 3% workforce loss. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So tech industries, tend to be doing this grow and shrink on a regular basis. But generally doesn't have enormous impact because it's limited geographic zone to Washington State and Silicon Valley. Again, my big concern, and I think should be your concern, is the storefronts in our own cities and towns and our main streets to see which ones are having issues and which ones aren't regarding survival. Saw this during COVID, how many restaurants are able to make it through the hibernation period to survive. And
Yeah.
sadly, some did not. Same thing here with not just restaurants, but also retailers, as whether or not they consumers notice the increased prices, and will that change consumer behavior? If it should, it would have a much more challenging impact regarding those businesses at the Main Street level, because unlike Walmart, Main Street businesses cannot absorb increased price structure and pass along the cost to consumers without severe impact.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. I'm curious. I don't think we've still seen the full effect of all the federal government layoffs either.
Well, it's a little deceptive because the layoffs are kind of strange, right? You know, many people took a buyout. You cannot
Ah,
take unemployment during the buyout.
true.
So hopefully, I hope everyone that took a buyout is able to fully retire or find a new job, which I believe they have to do that by end of September if they want to continue to get income. So, you know, if it's a spread out unemployment, the number should stay steady as a percent. It's when you have a massive rush, which of course the most dramatic we've ever seen was the week of COVID, when it
Right,
went
right.
from like 2 to like 3% to like 15% in a
Oh, it
heartbeat.
was just unprecedented, yeah.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. You know, in normal world that's not COVID, if it goes from 4.2 to 4.8 in 1 month, clearly there was a massive release of employees. But
Right.
then you need a few more months to see how many stay on unemployment. If they stay, the number will stay steady. And then if it starts to grow, it means that people aren't unemployed longer and
Yep.
there's job loss. So again, I talked last week how the Federal Reserve can't win regarding the new mandate on low inflation, steady inflation, and steady job growth, because it's always backward looking. And you know, as I said before, also, you know, how we do our budgets up here relies on economic indicators that are also backward looking.
Yes. Yep.
So, you know, all the government contracts that were canceled, that were not already canceled before, that they took credit for, because DOGE did that. They took credit for contracts that were already expired or ended, or the RFP ended already, so no one took it. They took credit for stuff that never actually made it out the door, because of, like, I don't know, bid process closing, no one bid it, right? So, a lot of little funny math there. Very corporate mentality. I think government's bad. You know, it's first corporate. You know, we'll see if, you know, what the lasting impacts are as we continue the year, if this is spread out in a way that there's not massive spikes, you probably won't see massive unemployment. But my, again, I focus back on, you know, if there's slowing construction, whether it be home building or government infrastructure projects like roads and bridges, or massive buildings like biotech or office spaces, which we know is still very challenging, the city of Boston filling those tenancies. And then, you know, whether or not, you know, Main Street, let's say, has to jack up the price by 30% on something, you know, will consumers pay that 30%?
Right. Yeah. So all questions that still remain to be answered for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's very much driven by human behavior, right? And we don't know how people are going to behave. I mean, yeah, the Chicago consumer confidence is very, very low, but people are still spending money. However, it seems for the immediate term, people are being more discretionary. Change in a month, and perhaps people decide that collectively, somehow independently, but collectively, decide they're going to take more summer vacations, and suddenly airlines were completely wrong in the projections about summer travel. Who knows, right? I mean, you make your own decisions individually, but you know, if everyone's making the same decision independently, it changes how this all looks.
Yeah.
And like I said, you control your life, and you don't control someone else next to you, but you may actually reach the same decision not knowing you did so.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. Depending on the circumstances of your situation. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I tell people you don't know people's story until you talk to their story. You shouldn't assume anyone's story by looking at the person next to you. And we always make that very bad mistake, making judgment calls about just on appearances of the person next to you versus actually listening to the story that they have. And the story will explain more what you're looking at. And but we have a trigger happy mentality about judging people.
Yeah, we're pretty predictable as humans go.
Well, I hope to try to be as fair as possible when I talk to you here about my call on things, how I perceive my call on things, where I think there are squarely blame on the government. And I think sometimes some things are really out of government control. And I am aware that Donald Trump's team constantly talk about him endlessly. If it wasn't for President Trump, blah, 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 right? Trump did this, Trump did, or he blames Biden, or you, or me, or Democrats, or immigrants, or whomever, or something goes sideways. But, I tend to tune out that static. But people eat that up. But I tend to ignore the words, oh, we're going to blame Biden. All right, skip that part. Let's see what's next. Are we blaming immigrants? Skip that part. What's next, right? Same thing with taking credit. I skip all that stuff. That's all noise to me. And it's really the second half I'm listening to. And then when you listen to the second half, for example, when Bessette, talked about that, there's a 90-day pause, and they're going to have continued conversation at some point, an undetermined schedule, no determined schedule, and they couldn't really explain what the U.S. got out of it. Well, they did everything they could by saying, President, do a great job, but he got nothing in return. When you really look at it carefully, they got nothing. So they're trying to pretend like he didn't cave by saying you got to win. But in China, President Xi is running around saying that we got to win, and it's concrete. Tariffs were reduced from 145%, which is kind of a fake number because not everything is 145, but we'll ignore that for the moment, to an average tariff. We consider all goods an average tariff of about 30%.
I know you don't have a lot of information about this, Tacky, but the governor today is introducing some kind of an energy affordability bill.
Yeah, I don't know what's in it. Obviously, people are very upset, and rightfully so, including myself, with natural gas prices under the distribution side, which is controlled by the Department of Public Utilities, which are the pipes in Massachusetts that get the gas to your home. It is not the pipes that get you the natural gas from Tennessee or other parts, where it's the big pipes where everyone draws from. I just noted earlier that natural gas prices on inflation was up 15 plus percent. That's the natural gas. That is not the distribution or transmission costs. The governor has very specific areas that she could address. It's under state regulation to try to address the issue. Natural gas itself is a form of deregulated product, because we don't actually control, we can't actually dictate the price of natural gas because it's market rate. I'm not entirely clear what she's going to do. She could potentially trim back some mandates that's in your distribution cost bill. But honestly, I couldn't tell you. I know a lot of energy, as you know. There's only so many places you can run. But taking off mandatory mandates on like renewable energy portfolio, I'm getting emails about that, that it causes your spiking your bill. That is false, by the way. The renewable energy portfolio moves so slowly in terms of our meeting our goals, in terms of a percentage at a time. It's not going to have monster impact on the energy cost. The issue is regarding whether or not the governor decides to take a shot and try to reduce some of the mandated costs of your distribution bill, that has a very broad range, which I'm not going to get into right now. That's a whole show. So I don't know what's going to happen. But we also talked about a pre-show about paying for gas. And while natural gas prices
Gasoline, right? Yeah, gas in your
are
car, yeah.
up, your natural prices have gone up for home heating and cooking, but gas prices have either stayed stable or go up in our geographic zone where we live. I can't speak for anywhere else, but where we live around the Quincy area. But despite the cost of oil floating between $58 and $62, gas should be closer to $2.25.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's boggling to both of us as we've talked about both on and offline here about why that isn't the case.
We saw this during COVID when the world stopped. And the refineries stop too because you can't overproduce because there's no way to put the gas. Gas station prices dropped significantly, not quite $2, but I mean, it really was closer to two than three. And also, I wasn't filling our tank up as much. But, that's what happened. And when COVID kind of saw subsiding and the world reactivated, especially the US economy, the refineries had to reactivate, but the refineries take months to reactivate, which creates a shortage, which creates a massive spike in gasoline, you may remember, because oil prices spike because all those tankers stop moving. And our on-demand economy requires continuous movement of all goods moving in and out of the US. So, that was that high demand and shortage for a while. Now we don't have a shortage problem. We have an overgeneration of fossil fuels, especially oil in particular. And for some reason, natural gas price, gasoline prices aren't following it.
Yeah, it is a bizarre conundrum that remains to play out. I don't understand it either. Maybe
Yeah,
because we are going into the summer driving season, maybe that has something to do with it.
we'll see as we head more of the weekend, the prices go up and up. I'm very perplexed about this. I truly am. Because I do understand there's a manufacturer price, you got the wholesalers, then you got the distribution system, then obviously the gas stations make money. I mean, they also have the taxes involved. I do understand there's a lot involved in the price structure of gas. It's not as simple as the wholesale price. I'm gonna guess that somewhere in the distribution section that may have maintained higher prices because your fuel coming in from outside the country is also tariffed. It's not just, plastic products from China. It's also includes fuel. So I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, there may be wholesalers trying to hoard money in anticipation of perhaps long-term situation. The Canadians, for example, are biggest oil provider for us by pipeline. And there's that 25% tariff that could still linger overhead while the administration decides to change their mind and just decide to tariff all the oil coming in. We don't know. And I think this uncertainty of businesses created each industry with different behavior about trying to pivot as needed regarding the cost they're going to have to pass to the consumer, or maybe they can actually absorb those costs,
I
which
think
means
it's the, like you said, it's the uncertainty, I think, that causes things to stalemate because people don't know, so they don't make a move.
well, exactly same thing in our area of government. I mean, there's been talk about in DC about cost shifting Medicare, Medicaid, which we call MassHealth, greater to us, and we already pay 50% of the cost of MassHealth. And this, but the employees are paid by federal dollars. So let's say they decide to change the reimbursement rate from 50% to 25% and cost shift onto us so they can save money. That would be probably a hole of around $2 billion plus to us, which we will be forced to make some hard decisions about how to manage it. And I will continue to berate the DC folks because local government and a state government, always makes these very hard decisions because we're closest to the people. So we get the beating, we get beat up first. Let's call it what it is. You're going to beat on me first regarding cuts in services. And then, if we ever try to create more revenue by taxes and fees, you're going to beat on us first. But DC is cowardly. They're very, they want to cut, spend, spend, spend. And it's Republicans that does this, and we all somehow buy it for some reason because it defies basic mathematics of one plus one, and continue the deficit spend. While people hate Democrats because we tax and spend, but we're saying we tax and spend. We don't cut and spend because at no point are they actually cutting. So that's a part I always found very mystifying that people think that is actually the logic.
Is that something the state's rainy day fund could be tapped for if needed?
We could, but it wouldn't be a permanent solution because we'd probably tap it for a temporary band-aid, but then we'll have to find a solution within our own budget. And since our discretionary budget is only about 30% of the budget, you talk about, $2 billion, and that could shave off maybe 4% of the discretionary budget.
I see. Yeah.
But the
Okay.
discretionary budget is about really about 18-ish billion dollars,
So not a
maybe.
lot, really, compared with a $62 billion budget.
Yeah, because most of our costs are fixed costs because local aid, Medicaid, MassHealth, and local aid represent close to almost half. And if I toss in all the mandated healthcare stuff, not necessarily from the state law, but also from the federal government, and you throw in the debt service, which, by the way, our debt service is about 3 to 4%. Just reminding folks, it's not that big. Plus, the prisons, UMass, we still pay settlements. Sometimes the lawsuits we lose. I mean, it can get well into the 65% zone fast.
Not a lot of discretionary leeway there to play with,
Always stand up with the federal government as well, right? They have a $6.5 trillion budget, but only $1.7 trillion of that budget is actually operational. The remainder is Medicare, Medicaid, MassHealth, and the other part is just paying debt. So, I mean, I was talking to a friend the other day People don't realize that your Social Security contribution is actually lower than it was before Obama. During the Obama administration, your Social Security, if I remember correctly, was 7.5 to the employee, 7.5% to the employee. They reduced it to 6.5 inside. They tried to get us through the 08 recession. They never raised it again. And you have a Social Security deficit. I wonder why.
Yeah, that would account for it for sure. Yeah.
There's your unfunded liability, right? Medicare, your FICO, Medicare hasn't changed in forever. But unfortunately, me and you, both of us, are going to eventually find ourselves in the next decade, on Medicare. Generation below us actually is a lower population than the generation we're in. And that will continue to show a birth rate decline. But you're still paying the same amount, even though the older generation is living longer because of Medicare. Because again, my mom, no Medicare, my mom would be much more serious problems. Yeah, but the price you're paying has meant zero reflection of inflation regarding the contribution you make on a paycheck. I do Medicare as part of state government. So something for you to chew on when you think about it at home regarding not necessarily the fact that all of us hate to pay taxes because we hate to pay taxes, but really think about how it's going to affect you if nothing changes about how the federal government operates, on deficit spending.
We are at the end of our hour, Jackie.
Yeah, Joe. Well, it's time flies when we're having fun.
We could just go
Happy. I'm
on and on, but we want to leave people, something to come back for.
happy. I'm a little less scratchy today
Yes.
by my voice. As you know, because those who can watch my video knows I'm in my office, room 42, the State House. You can brave the pollen of the Boston Common if you want to come on up. We are at 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is our number here. We are staffed. The front desk is overwhelmed. You get the auto system, which was say not my name because this is not my suite control. But be patient through the auto prompts. Just reach anybody in my office and we'll get the message. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, TACKEY. That's chan@mahouse.gov. Obviously, we welcome emails. It's calmer. Post budget, it's so much calmer now. And I do get a lot of testimonial emails as we continue public hearings. We had one yesterday. We have another public hearing in 2 weeks, and my email box starts to fill up with testimony. But I do read it, we do sort it, we try to prioritize the At Tacky Chan is our X account, and State Representative Tacky Chan is our Facebook account. We also have MALegislature.gov. Strongly recommend again, MALegislature.gov. You can look up bills about me, watch public hearings, watch sessions, create an account, have alerts sent to you. Very highly recommend MALegislature.gov. We have tackychin.org is just a contact page. Of not just to find me, but also to look for phone numbers. And of course, we'll hear from Joe every week or 2 weeks to talk about whatever the day brings. And of course, please email Joe, contact QATV, if you feel like a specific topic you'd like to talk it, for us to talk about. And check with Joe every single morning in his 10-minute news brief.
Thanks so much, Jackie. We'll check in again soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon, Joe. Take care.